यूं छोड़ दूं कि टुडे वी स्टार्टिंग अ न्यू चैप्टर 15 विच इज कॉल्ड पुरुषोत्तम योगा. पुरुषोत्तम योगा. नाउ इन भज गोविंदम वी गो टू वन ऑफ द वर्सेस that Shankara writes in Bhaja Govindam. Punarapi Jananam Ranam Pi Janani Chatare Shayanam Iha Sansare Bahut Dustare Kripaya Pare Pahi Morare. Now, what does it mean? Here, Shankara talks about Iha Sansare, this creation is sansar. The scriptures refer to as sansar, the world in which we have to interact with. So sansar means people, objects, situations. This is the world with which we have to interact. And why is it that we have to interact with this world? In this verse, Shankara says, because punarapi jananam, you have taken birth in this world. Punarapi Jananam, you have taken birth in this world, and not only taken birth once, but he says what? Punarapi, again and again you have been coming back again and again into this world, taking birth. For what purpose? To exhaust our past karmas. That means we have accumulated so many karmas that in one birth we cannot exhaust them all. And yet what do we do? When we take this birth, we create some new karma, which means what? Punarapi Jananam. And then that is not enough. Punarapi Jananam, of course, when we take Jananam, then what happens? Punarapi Maranam. So that which is born, death is certain. And then what happens after death? Because we have not exhausted the warehouse of our karmas, what do we do then? Shankara says, Punarapi Janani Jathare Shayanam. After death, you don't take birth yet, you come back and you lie dormant sleeping in your mother's womb. So, Punarapi Janani Jathare Shayanam. You are sleeping dormant in your mother's womb. What are you waiting for? Punarapi Jananam, waiting for that again. So thus what is, he says, Iha Sansare, this is what is called sansar. So what is sansar? In Shankara's definition is Punarapi Jananam, Punarapi Maranam, Punarapi Janani Jathare Shayanam. This is the cycle of sansar. Okay? Now, therefore, what about it? So, okay, I know that this is the cycle of sansar. What about it? He says, Iha dustare, bahut dustare. It is so difficult to cross over. Bahut means very dustare, very difficult for us to cross over this ocean of birth and death. Meaning, for us to attain moksha is not very easy. So bahut dustare. So what can we do therefore? If it's so difficult, it's not impossible, it's difficult, he says. So what you should do, he says, Iha sansare bahut dustare kripaya pare pahi murare. Murare, oh murare. Murare is another name for Lord Krishna because he killed the evil demon called Mura. So it's taken one name of Krishna is Murare. But this is the external demon that Krishna killed. So what are our demons that we have to kill? The internal demons we have to kill. Lust, anger, greed, ego, jealousy, pride, envy, all these. So how do we kill these demons inside? We invoke the blessings or the grace. So kripaya pare. Kripaya means please be graced, please shower me with your grace. Kripaya pare. Pahi Murare. Because these are the demons. Why do I have to kill them? Why do I have to kill all of these demons? they are my obstacles to my spiritual growth. So they are the obstacles to moksha. These are what is standing in our way of moksha. And I have to learn how to kill all these demons. But what is the paradox of human being? Paradox is our mind is so engrossed in enjoying all the pleasures of the world. What is the problem? Yet at the same time, we don't want to let go of God. We want the world and we want God. So both we want. We want the pleasures of the world and yet we want the, what we call this, the serenity of God. So the question is, of course, if you are going after the world for sense gratification, no way you can purify your senses, your mind, etc. So what does the scripture say? If you want to, people say, if I fix my mind on the world, I got no time for God. Where have I got time for God? Right? Because I have responsibilities, I have duties. I cannot let go of the world and just sit down the whole day and chant God's name. So what is the advice of the scriptures?
Do your work,
do your duties, and turn your work into worship. So use the world. Don't run away from the world. Use the world. Do your duties. Do all your duties and responsibilities, but divinize all your actions. And there's a very beautiful line in the Bhagavad Gita, if you all recall, in chapter 8, verse 6. Just one line, if you can just remember this. Chapter 8, verse 6. Verse 7. Page 152. Chapter 8, verse 7. Page 152. If you look at the second line, the Sanskrit verses there. Very beautiful, very powerful advice from Krishna to Arjuna. He says, Mam anusmara yudhyacha. Yudhya means to fight. You go and fight. But remember me. So you say, how can I remember you all the time? I got so many things to remember. I got appointments. I got to do this. I got to do that. So many things to remember. Lord, how can I remember you? Fight. Of course, here he's talking to Arjuna. Fight means is go and do your duty. Okay, so whatever duties you are doing, go and do your duties. So how do I remember you? So it's not remembering God all the time. It is basically the more and more you go on the path of devotion, you already have love for God in your heart. Once you have love, intense love for God in your heart, everything that you do becomes divine. It's not that you have to remember Him all the time, 24 hours. No, we know it's not possible because we have to think of so many other things. But what it means is increase your devotion. When that foundation of devotion is there, the love of God is in your heart, every action itself. Which part?
No worries.
We went to India and I was falling sick about it.
No worries.
Okay, so chapter 8, verse number 6. Mam anusmara yudhyacha. Have that devotion of God in your heart and with this devotion for Lord, carry out all your duties. and therefore you convert every action into a prayer, into worship, and every action you are doing for the Lord. So there is no attachment. That's why if you look also at chapter 3 verse 19, there's another very nice verse there. Chapter 3 verse 19, page 67. Okay? So very practical advice is given there. Chapter 3 verse 19, therefore always efficiently do your duty without attachment. What happens? Doing work without attachment, man attains the supreme. He's not asking you to go and pray, go and do all kinds of rituals, etc., puja, no. What do you do? Just do your work without attachment. So that is a very simplified path for us, how to convert our work into worship. So now, looking at this Bhajan Govindam also, this is what basically the Upanishads also tell us, that in order to gain this moksha, to gain this freedom from this world, we must know three things very important. First of all, we must know what is jiva, us as the individual, who is this jiva. So we must have knowledge about the individual soul, because it is this individual soul which is trapped in the cycle of samsara, birth and death. So you must know about this jiva. Second, you must know something also about jagat, because you have to interact with this world. So you must have a very clear idea, what is this jagat that you are interacting with, the people, objects and the various situations. And the third is, we must know something about Brahman, the absolute reality. Thus, the relationship between jiva, jagat and Brahman must be very clearly understood. If we are to break out of this cycle of birth and death, we must understand the relationship between these three. So, in this chapter 15, Krishna deals with this situation by giving us, it's called Purushottama, Purush Uttama, there are two words. There is Purusha Uttama. Put together becomes Purush Uttama. So, supreme person, it means Purusha person, and Uttama is supreme. So, supreme person. Now, we are also called Purushas, but we are not Purusha Uttama. We are just normal Purushas. Only that Brahman can be called the Uttama Purusha. Which means what? Nirguna Brahman, the absolute reality, which is beyond time and space. And this is what Krishna is going to explain. That's why this is a very, very important chapter, chapter 15. Right? And three topics Krishna will speak about: the description of the jiva, jagat and Brahman. What is jiva, I'll tell you. What is jagat and what is Brahman? Number two, what is the cause of jiva's attachment to this jagat? Why is it that the jiva is bound to this world? In fact, he did explain to us in the past chapter 14. He said the three gunas are the cause of our bondage to this world. So in this chapter 15, he will elaborate on that. And third, once we know what causes the bondage, he must also tell us what is the remedy, how to break this bondage and attain moksha. So, this is the topic of this chapter. And of course, the means to break this bondage, there is only one, and that is Jnana Yoga or path of knowledge. See? Now, therefore, what is our goal? Our goal is to attain Brahman. What is this Brahman? Krishna already told us in the closing verse of the last chapter 14. Chapter 14. Verse 27, he identified what is this Brahman. So how did he identify Brahman? With five qualities he gave us of Brahman. If you look at chapter 14, verse 27. He says, the very nature of this higher self, the supreme self of Brahman, the first quality he gave us was Amritasya. Amritasya means indestructible. So when this Amrit, you know, comes from the word Amrit, right? Amrit. So Amrit means indestructible. When we say indestructible, what do we mean? What do you mean by indestructible? Cannot?
Not be a time and space.
not bound by time and space exactly. That is what we call indestructible, that exists at all periods of time and exists everywhere. The second quality he gave was avya yasya. You look at the verse 27, amritasya avya yasya. Avya yasya means immutable. It is free from transformation. Body is subject to transformation, Brahman remains immutable. So that is the second nature of Brahman. Second is Shashvatasya. Shashvatasya means also eternal, meaning beyond all periods of time. It exists in the past, it exists now, and it will continue to exist in the future. Dharmasya. Dharmasya means this Brahman can be attained. We can merge with Brahman. How? Through the path of Dharma, by following the path of Dharma, which is given in the scriptures. So the path of Dharma, which is described in the scriptures, Lord is also called Dharmasya, that which can be attained through the practice of Dharma. And once we attain this Brahman, what is his nature? Sukhasya. It is the very nature of supreme bliss. Sukham. Once we attain a merger with Brahman, it is the very nature of supreme bliss. And finally, the supreme bliss is, if you look at the last line, I kanti kasya, which means it is absolute bliss. Whereas the bliss that we attain from the world is temporary bliss, this bliss that we want to attain from Brahman is absolute bliss that exists all the time. So now, we must recall one very important thing in the last chapter. When Krishna said that the world, the whole world, the whole creation is nothing but what? Mixture of what? Purusha and Prakriti. Okay? Purusha is consciousness and Prakriti is matter. So our whole spiritual journey is to how to detach from this matter and attach to gods. So here in chapter 15, Krishna uses the imagery of a tree to explain this whole relationship between Jiva, Jagat and Brahman. He gives us a very example of a tree. Okay? And the tree which he uses to describe, give us this description of the world, here is called the Ashwata tree. Okay? Now don't confuse the Ashwata tree with the banyan tree. That's different. Okay? Ashwata tree is called a fig tree or peepal tree or bodhi tree. It is different than the banyan tree. Okay? The leaf is sort of triangular, very sharp pointed. Tree is quite vast. Okay? Not the one which has those... that one is the banyan tree. This is a tree with one trunk. It has branches spread out, not the one that you see, that is the banyan tree. The leaf is different. The banyan tree has got many trunks which descend down as roots. Okay? So don't confuse that tree. This is a fig tree, people tree. Okay? And I found out the Tamil word for this. You all want to know, it's called Arashamara. Okay, right? I don't know whether I pronounce it correctly. Arashamara. Okay. So I was researching what it is, what I found. Okay. Now this tree represents the what we call the world. Okay. And how everything is connected to this tree, Krishna will explain. Now, in chapter 10, also verse 26, if you recall, Krishna says, when he gave a list of all his glories in chapter 10, in verse 26 he says, Ashvata Sarva Vrikshana. Vriksha means tree. Sarva Vriksha meaning among all the trees I am the Ashvata tree. So he already glorified this tree as one of his manifestations in his creation. Right? Now we should ask, why has Krishna chosen to compare the universe with a tree? Why not use something else? Use flower, use rock, use ocean. Why take the example of a tree? So we must look now at the common features between a tree and the universe. Okay? What are the common features between a tree and the universe? So there are many, let us look at a few. First of all, this tree, the Ashwata tree, is said to be very vast. It is huge. It has got branches going on and on and on. It's a huge, very vast tree. So just like the universe also, it is very huge. Nobody knows where is the beginning, where is the end of the universe. That's why he has used this Ashwata tree to depict the entire world, the entire creation. Number two, the tree has also got an invisible cause. What is the invisible cause? It is a root under the ground which we cannot see. So the tree is visible, we can see the tree, but the cause of the tree is the root which is underground which we cannot see, which is not visible to us. Similarly, the world is that we can perceive, but the source or the creation of this world is that we cannot see. Brahman is not visible to us, it's not available for sense perception. Number three, the tree, this Ashwata tree especially, has got many, 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 many branches, okay, which are spread from the top of the tree right down to the bottom of the tree. So what is the similarity with this world? Many, many lokas, some are above, some are below. There are 14 lokas also. So just like the tree has branches on top, branches below, the world also has got lokas above and lokas below also. Number four, the tree has got many, many birds sitting on the branches. So how does that compare to the world? What else? So all the birds represent different jivas. And then another similarity you can see between birds and jivas. Can you see another similarity? Birds can hop to the top branch, they can hop to the bottom branch. Meaning what? So jivas also can move to higher loka. Jiva also can move to lower loka. Fine. Tree produces fruit. Birds are attracted by this fruit. They eat the fruit. Some fruit is sweet, some fruit is bitter. So compare it again, the birds to the jivas. We see many attractions in this world. Some attractions are very pleasant, some attractions become very unpleasant. So these are nothing but the karma phalam. We come to this world to experience some favorable moments, sometimes we experience unfavorable moments. Just like the birds, sometimes they get sweet fruit, sometimes they get bitter fruit also. Number six, see, so fascinating, everything is going to break down and tell you for the branch, what is the root, what is, everything is going to be explained and related to the world. So once we understand this tree, we can understand the relationship of the world to us. Six, a tree is covered by leaves. What is the function of the leaves? Two functions. One, it nourishes the tree. Number two, it protects the tree also. So it protects and it nourishes. By absorbing sunlight, water, it produces food for the tree. So the leaves of the tree are compared to the Vedas. So similarly, the Vedas also nourishes and protects us. How? How do the Vedas also nourish and protect us? As what? How do they nourish us and protect us? One is knowledge, of course they nourish us with knowledge. What else? And they protect us also. They nourish and they protect. See, the one part of the Veda which is called the Karma Khandas, all the rituals and prayers are there. If you want to attain happiness in life, happiness in marriage, happiness in business, whatever it is, all the prayers and rituals are there. So by performing those prayers and rituals as mentioned in the Karma Kanda portion of the Vedas, they help to nourish us and they help to protect us. So there are many mantras there to chant to help to protect us also. So just like the leaves protect the trees and nourish the tree, the Vedic mantras also are there to nourish us with whatever we want and also to protect us. Seven. See, so many differences, you never see them sometimes. Seven. When we look at a tree, is it a cause or an effect? Is it a cause or an effect? Both, isn't it? It is, the seed is the cause, the tree is the effect. Then what happens? The tree is the cause and the seed is the effect. So there is an eternal cycle of cause and effect. So in the same way, many people ask, birth came first or karma came first? Which came first? Did we take birth first or did the karma come first? If you say birth came, then you say where the karma to get the birth. So which came first? If you say karma came first, then how did the karma come if I was not born? Who made the karma? Who did the karma? You see the problem? So there is cause and effect. Nobody knows how long is this eternal cycle been going on and on and on. Just like we cannot say also, is the tree a cause or an effect? We also cannot say is the birth impulse or karma impulse also. So it is a continuous cycle of what you call cause effect that has been going on from time immemorial. Okay? The last point eight is, even though the tree seems impermanent, after a while the tree will have to die. But what happens? It produces a seed and it carries on to the leaf. So similarly, even though the mortal body perishes, but because the karmas will come back again and again and again. So that is the similarity between the tree and the patient. Okay? So there is eternal, there is no beginning, no end. Okay? So now let us look at the verse number one. With this understanding, let's go into the verse. So what Krishna says here, if you look at the second line of verse 15, he says, Ashvatam Prahu. Prahu means it is said to be. Prahu means it is said to be the Ashvata tree. Now, the minute you say it is said to be Ashvata tree, what is the next question that will come to your mind? It is said to be the Ashvata tree. What is the next question that should pop up in your mind? Who said? Said to be. Who said? Does it say there? Who says? He says said to be Ashvata. Who is it? So who has said that? Who has talked about this Ashvata tree? So this Ashvata tree has been mentioned in our Shrutis and our Smritis. It is not only in the Gita. You will find this tree is mentioned in Tathopanishad. It is also mentioned in Mahabharata. And many other texts also mention about this Ashvata tree. So when he says this, it is said about the Ashvata tree, where he said, it is said earlier before already in the Shrutis and the Smritis, it has already been mentioned. Okay? So this is not the first time that Krishna is mentioning about this Ashvata tree. Now we take this word Ashvata also has got a very interesting meaning. The word Swa. So we take the three words, a, swa, ha. Okay, we break it up into three words. So swa means, the word swa in the center means that which exists. Anything which exists we call swa. Okay. When we add the word ha, swatha means that which exists tomorrow. So tomorrow it is still existing. That is called swatha. Now what happens when you add the a in front of this whole thing? A, swa, ha. So in Sanskrit when you add the alphabet A in front of any word, What happened? We can't focus here. So what does it mean now? That which does not exist tomorrow, that is Ashvatthama. So you can see now the similarity to the world. The world also is the same. It is not going to exist. Everything in the world is constantly changing, right? What exists today is not going to exist tomorrow. If you have any doubts, go and look at your pictures. Black hair is gone, teeth are gone, everything is going away, right? So Ashvatthama means that which does not exist tomorrow. The world also is constantly changing. Now, that is the first description, Ashvatha tree. Then about this tree, if you look at the second line, he says, about this tree, it is said to be avyayam, imperishable. So this Ashvatthama tree, which does not exist tomorrow, now Lord says it is said to be avyayam, imperishable. So, why is there this contradiction? Here you say Ashvatha means that which doesn't exist tomorrow. Suddenly you come and tell us, no, this Ashvatha tree is avyayam, it's imperishable. So why this contradiction? Exactly. Because the tree will go away, but the seed will exist and the tree will come back again into manifestation again. So that's why it says, although just like the world, just like us, we also cease to exist tomorrow, but in reality, because of the karmas, we will come back again, again and again. And even when Mahapralayam happens, what we are going through individually is only known as laya, that is destruction of the individual body. But when Pralayam happens, that's when the entire universe collapses, but it does not get destroyed. It goes back into what? Seed form or unmanifest form. And during Mahashrishti, the whole what we call creation is woken up again and becomes manifest again. So actually the cycle never ends, right? It goes on and on, nothing is destroyed. So that's why the tree also is said to be avyayam, the world also is avyayam. Okay, now we come to the roots, go back to the first line. He says, so it's quite dusty here, do you find it dusty? Okay, about the root now, the first line, it says, Urdhva Moolam. Moolam means root. He says, of this tree, the Moolam, the root is Urdhva, it is up. So what do you mean when you say the root is up? We must not take a literal meaning. When he says of this tree the root is up, the word up has got two meanings. Urdhva means it is superior, it is above. So there can be two meanings. So we don't take the literal meaning, we talk about the allegorical meaning. So when Bhagavan says the root of the tree is above, it means it is superior. So when you say the root is superior, what do you mean by that? Since the root is not up, actually the root is not up, where is the root? Root is below the ground, but he's saying here the root is up. So what he means, the root is superior. So when you say the root is superior, what are you pointing at? The cause of this creation, right? The cause of this creation, this root, which is the cause of this tree, which we cannot see, that's why we say it is superior. Similarly, God, who is the cause of this creation, we always consider Him superior. Isn't it? When we pray, where do we look? We say, where is God? Where do you tell a child, where is God? Up, right? You always point up. Where is heaven? Up. Where is God? Up. When you do a family tree, where do you put your ancestors? Right at the top. So top means what? He is the very origin, very source of this whole family. So when he says Urdhva Moolam, he is pointing us that the creation, which the creator which cannot be seen, is superior than this creation. He is not affected by this creation. So just like the tree, we can't see the root, we also cannot see the very creator himself. Okay? And also it means another thing, he is also beyond comprehension. We can't see him, we can't see his creator, just like we can't see the root of the tree. Okay. Now, the second word there, Adaha Shakam. Shakam means branches. Where are the branches? Downwards. Again, downwards, don't take it physically downwards, but it means what? Just like the root is up, we can't see. The branches are down, something we can see means what? What can you see? The whole creation, the world in front of you, that's what you can see. So the branches represent the world which we can see, which we can perceive. Okay? So the root is the unseen cause, the branches are the visible effects. Okay? What we can experience. That means these branches represent everything. The sun, the solar system, the moon, the planets, the fishes, the birds, the trees, everything. All this is represented by the branches. Okay? Okay. Then let's go down to the third line now. Now he says, Yasya means of this tree now. He's describing more things about this tree. Parnani, meaning leaves, are Chandhamsi. Chandhamsi means Vedic meters. So it says the leaves of these trees are represent the meters of the Vedas or the mantras of the Vedas. So just like we discussed just now, the leaves nourish and protect the tree. The mantras which are given in the Vedas, especially the Karma Kanda portion, and in the Vedas they are said to be 100,000 verses, out of which 80,000 verses are Karma Kanda. So 80% of the Vedas basically deals with rituals and prayers. And whatever we can, we can get from the world, whatever enjoyment we can get from the world, all these are prescribed in the 80,000 verses of the Karma Kanda portion of the Vedas. Then 4,000 verses are Jnana Kanda. For knowledge only 4,000 verses. So rituals and prayers 80,000 verses, knowledge only 4,000 verses, Jnana Kanda. And the balance, how many is there? 16,000 verses, they are known as Upasana Kanda. Upasana is basically also dealing with mantras, chanting of mantras, prayers, etc. So here the leaves represent which portion of the Vedas? Karma Kanda portion of the Vedas. Because just like the leaves protect and nourish the tree, the Karma Kanda portion of the Vedas also nourish and protect us. If we do and follow the rituals, we follow the prayers, we can attain all our material goals and we can also protect ourselves from various things also. Okay? So also, we'll come back to that again. But one thing of course the scriptures always say, although they give us so many verses for Karma Kanda, why is that they give us so many verses on Karma Kanda and so few verses on Jnana Kanda? Why is that? 80% of the Vedas concentrate on worldly achievement. Only 4,000 verses concentrate on achieving absolute Brahman. Why is that? Sorry? Majority of people are not interested in Jnana Kanda. They are more interested in worldly attainments. But yet the Vedas always caution us that these are all temporary, you should understand. You can chase after them, but you will never attain the supreme bliss. So that's one thing we must be always clear about. Okay. So now he's explained about the branches, he's explained about the root, he's explained about the leaves. Now, what does he say about this? The last line. Yaha means the one who, Veda, the word Veda here means, not the Vedas, but the word Veda means the one who knows. The one who is very clear about this whole relationship between the individual, the world and God. Through the depiction of this tree, one who understands and comprehends everything about this world, he says, Saha, such a person is a wise one. Such a person knows how to live in this world. That's why the Gita never advocates us to run away from the world, run away from duties and responsibilities. Understand the world. Learn what is the nature of the world, how to react in the world, and how to use the world to attain God. So it says, Yaha Veda, the one who knows, Saha Veda Ved, he is the one who really knows. Yaha, the one who knows, Yaha Veda, the one who knows, Saha Veda Ved, that is the one you can call is a knowledgeable person, that is the intelligent person, that is the wise person who knows how to carry out all his duties and responsibilities and does not get entangled. Meaning what? This person does not get carried away with the karma kanda portion. He knows very clearly, whatever prayers, rituals I do will only give me temporary happiness. So what does this person do? He is aware that all his prayers and rituals lead me to temporary happiness. What does this Vedavin do? He detaches himself and attaches himself to God. This is the wise person, Krishna says, who understands very clearly everything about this world. Who does not get attached to the world. So, this is the Veda with the knower of the scriptures. He clearly understands the knowledge of the scriptures and he does not get entangled in rituals and prayers to attain temporary worldly gains, but turns his direction towards the absolute supreme bliss. Now, in verse 2, Krishna goes on further to explain about this tree. So what does he say about this tree now? He focuses now on the branches of this tree. So he says now, tasya, the word tasya is there, in the first line you see the word tasya. Tasya means of that tree, so it's connected to the first verse, of that Ashwata tree. The sakha, now he's talking about the branches, the sakha are prashrata. So he describes now further about the branches. Tasya sakha prashrata. Prashrata means they are all spread out all over the branches of this tree. And if you look at the picture of this Ashwata tree, I was reading that the diameter can be even up to 3 meters in radius, very wide. The branches go out very, very wide. So the branches are all spread out. Okay? And where are they spread out? In two directions. So look at the first line. Adaha means downwards. And Urdhva means upwards. Thus this tree has branches which are spread out all over. Some are up and some are down. So again, when we talk about down and up, basically the branches mean the 14 lokas. Okay, we are now on which loka? Bhuloka. This earth which we are in is called Bhuloka. And above Bhuloka there are six lokas. Bhu, Bhuva, Swaha, Maha, Jana, Satya, Tapaha. Bhu, Bhuva, Swaha, Maha, Jana, Tapa, Satya. These are the six lokas which are above Bhu loka. And collectively all these six lokas are known as Swarga loka. So Swarga loka has got six layers also. Who is not Swarga? I don't think there is Swarga loka right now. Who is the earthly loka? Okay? The six lokas above Bhu loka are collectively known as Swarga loka, which is Bhuva, Swaha, Maha, Jana, Tapa, Satya. Okay? So why so many lokas? Why so many lokas? Different levels of enjoyment and pleasures. The higher you go, the more pleasures, the more enjoyments. Okay? The more greater deeds you do, the more higher you go in the lokas. Okay? But as what he told us in chapter 9, no matter how high the loka you go, who have come ahead. Okay? So that is the upper branches. Then the lower branches, below Bhuloka, how many layers are there?
Seven.
Which collectively represent Naraka Loka. And the names are Atala. If you want to know, if you want to go there, you should know. Atala, Vitala, Atala, Vitala, Sutala, Sutala. Atala, Vitala, Sutala, Talatala, T-A-L-E, T-A-L-E. Atala, Vitala, Sutala, Talatala, Mahatala, Rasatala, Patala. The lowest level is Patala. So Atala, Vitala, Sutala, Rasatala, Talatala, Mahatala, Patala. That is the lower seven layers. So the upper branches represent Swargaloka, the lower branches represent Naraloka, the middle branch is the Bhuloka where we are now. Now, what does it mean? That means we cannot experience Swargaloka, we cannot experience Narakaloka. What it means to tell is those who are in the individual lokas, they only can experience their own loka. Just like we can experience Bhuloka, those devas in the heaven, they experience their own individual lokas. So just like the birds which are all over the tree, all the jivas also are spread over all the 14 lokas. And each jiva is only able to experience the loka in which he or she is, in not other lokas. Okay? The difference between Bhuloka is called Karma Bhumi. Because only in Bhuloka, whatever action you do has got a karma balance. Whereas in Swarga Loka or Naraka Loka, it is called Bhoga Bhumi. Bhoga means you can only go there to exhaust your karma. Whatever good you do in Swarga Loka, you don't get any merits. Whatever bad you do also, you don't get any merits. Okay? And that also applies for Naraka Loka also. Okay? So, each has its own loka to experience based on the what? Punyam and papam that they have accumulated on earth. Okay? So, all these different things, the insects which are on the tree, the birds which are on the tree, basically represent the variety of creations that exist. And according to the Puranas, there are 8.4 million types of varieties of creatures that exist in this planet. Okay. It's in, mentioned in one of the Puranas. I forgot what is the name of the Purana. Okay. So Urdhva means again what? The upper branches means superior lokas. Okay, not that they are on top. So don't get this idea that heaven is somewhere on top. We do not know. We always say heaven, we look up, but I really do not know. When he says Urdhva means it is a most superior loka, lower branches means it is an inferior loka, that's all. Now what happens now, he says further. Look at the second line. Guna Pravrda. Pravrda means these branches, whether they are up or down, wherever they are, Pravrda means they are made strong. They are nourished. What are they nourished by? They are nourished by the gunas. So what does it mean here? Just like the branches are nourished and sustained by water and sunlight, all the 14 lokas are nourished by what? By the gunas. Now what does it mean? It means depending on which guna, sattvic guna nourishes the swarga lokas. The more sattvic gunas we have, the more Swarga Loka is nourished, is made strong. That means more and more people will go to Swarga Loka, depending on the gunas. If you have predominant tamasic gunas, then Naraka Loka will be nourished by the tamasic gunas. And if you are basically in between rajasic gunas, where you are prone to a lot of action, then Bhuloka is your place where you nourish this Bhuloka. So if you recall, Deva, how is Deva Shariram, the Devas which have a body in Swarga Loka, how are the bodies formed? They are nourished by sattvic gunas. How the Asuric bodies formed? they are nourished by tamasic guna. And how a worldly beings like us form, we are nourished by rajasic. Predominantly, we all have rajasic guna. So if you recall, there was one verse that explained this whole thing in chapter 14, verse 18. If you go back to chapter 14, verse 18, page 264. So there is more clearer, it was explained there. Chapter 14, verse 18, page 264. Those who abide in sattva rise to higher worlds, swarga loka. Those who abide in rajas remain in the low loka. And those who abide in tamas sink to the lowest region, that is the naraka loka. Okay? So it is the gunas. The gunas, our individual gunas, which gunas are stronger, that particular guna will nourish a particular loka also. Okay? By our own actions. So that's what he says about the gunas now. Just like the branches are nourished by rain and sunlight, the lokas also are nourished by the gunas also. Okay. Then what else? Vishaya pravala. Okay, the next word is there, vishaya pravala. Pravala here means twigs. Now what are twigs in a branch? You notice in a branch, at every branch there are little wooden extensions. Those are called twigs, right? Okay. Now, what happens to these twigs? Generally, these twigs either grow into more branches, or generally in these twigs is where you find the leaves sprout or the fruit sprouts. Okay? So just like the twigs where there is a fruit or a leaf that sprouts, similarly, in the same way, we human beings also, we interact with what the world, sense objects, vishaya means sense objects. That means our eyes are attracted to forms, our ears are attracted to good music, nose is attracted to smell, tongue is attracted to good food. This is called interaction with sense objects. Okay? Now, as a result of the interaction between us, what happens? What happens? Constantly, our five senses are interacting with the world, right? What happens? Even before karma starts, I think we must follow next week's class. It's too dusty. Will it? Okay, no, sorry. Okay, what happens because of these interactions? See, supposing you like chocolate cake and you're interacting every time looking at chocolate cake, you pass by the shop window, cake shop, you see chocolate cake, chocolate cake, chocolate cake, what happens?
Desire.
First, before desire comes, attachment comes, right? So first attachment, because you keep on thinking, should I have it, then comes desire. I should have it. Then what happens? Then you have had it. That means then comes action. So just look at it. Attachment springs desire. From desire springs action. And then from action comes what? Karma comes karma phala. From karma phala comes what? Doesn't end there. Punyam and papam. From punyam and papam comes punarapi jananam, punarapi mananam. Punarapi mananam, jananam, come back again. Again attachment, again desire, again action, again karma, karma phalam, punyam and papam, punyam and papam, punarapi jananam, punarapi. So the cycle goes on and on and on. Move and move, yeah, exactly. So we go on and on and on. So this is a form of attraction. Just like the twig, where there is a flower, the flower attracts the bee, or there is a fruit which attracts the bird. Once we eat that, then we are caught in that vicious cycle of actions and desires and actions. And this is what he says. So he compares the twigs to sense objects that attracts us. Okay? And thus, the whole cycle keeps going on and on. That's why in Viveka Chidamani, Shankara writes very beautifully, he says, sense objects are more deadlier than the bite of a cobra. So why is that? He says, sense objects, that which attracts all our senses, they are more deadlier, you better be bitten by a cobra. But a cobra bites you, you die. But yet he says, sense objects.
Trapped.
How you trapped? Sense objects are more deadlier than the bite of a cobra, than the venom of a cobra. With jealousy. So stay with snakes in the room, but don't stay with a person who is jealous. So here we look at Shankara's statement. What he is saying? Snake is far away. He is not going to affect you unless he comes near you, sinks a fangs in your skin, injects the poison in your blood, then only you will die. But sense objects don't have to come near you. From far away you see, you walk away, what happens? They have already entered into your mind. So that's why he says they are more deadlier than the bite of a cobra. They don't have to come near you, you don't have to intake them in. But they even can be far away, they will already enter. And once that wrong thought enters your mind, it starts the whole chain of actions and reactions. Okay? So attachment leads to desire, desire pushes us to action. And that beautifully Krishna spoke about the 8 steps downfall of a man. Do you remember when? Very famous verse. 62 and 63. 8 steps downfall. It starts with a person contemplating on sense objects. Leads to this, leads to this, leads to that. So you can go back and read chapter 2, verse 62 and 63. There's an 8 step downfall of a human being. It all starts with attachment. Okay. So now it's explained about the what we call that, twig. Now he says that this, the third line there, about these roots, now he's talking about the roots. He earlier spoke about the branches and the twigs, now he comes to talk about the roots. So he says about these roots, now this root he's talking about is different than the earlier root he mentioned in verse 1. Verse 1 he spoke about the root which is superior, which is the unseen Brahman, which is the cause of this world. Now this root, what he is talking about, he says, this mulani anusamtatani. These roots, anusamtatani means they spread. So he is talking about multiple roots now. They are spreading. Where are they spreading? Adaha. They are spreading downwards. Earlier root was where? On top. Now he's talking about the inferior roots. He says these mulani, these roots, anusamtatani, they are spreading adaha downwards. So again, we must not think about this, what is the word again? Literally, yes, okay? So we know that the roots are downwards. And what is the functions of the roots below the tree? Those, all those multiple roots that run underground. What is the purpose of these roots? One is nourishment, the other is they support and hold the tree firmly. So now they anchor the tree to the ground. They are the very support. That's why you want to kill the tree, what you do? Chop the roots first, the tree will fall down. So he says these roots which are spreading downwards represent the various vasanas. These multiple roots that are holding the whole tree down, they are the vasanas that are binding us to this world. Remember, the tree represents the world. So these roots are our strong binding force to this world. Because of the vasanas, we keep coming back and again. Vasanas in the form of raga dvesha, your likes and dislikes, okay? Which drive our actions. They keep us pulled back downwards. Where do they keep us? Keep pulling us? Karmanu bandini manushya loke. They कर्मा अनुबंधिनी, अनुबंधिनी मीन्स बंधम इज बाउंड, अनुबंधिनी मीन्स दे फर्मली बाइंड यू, दे स्ट्रांगली बाइंड यू योर वासना, वेयर मनुष्य लोके इन द वर्ल्ड ऑफ ह्यूमन बीइंग्स एंड कर्मा वेयर देयर इज लॉट्स ऑफ एक्शन. दैट्स व्हाई दिस वर्ल्ड इज कॉल्ड कर्म भूमि, बिकॉज इट बाइंड्स अस बैक हियर टू परफॉर्म मोर एक्शंस अगेन. वी कैन नॉट रन अवे फ्रॉम एक्शंस. And these vasanas bring us back again to this karma, karma bhumi, and not only that, they bind us very strongly to this world. Okay? We have to keep on taking, because of the vasanas, we have to keep on taking repeated births. Okay? Now, therefore, if we have to keep on taking repeated births because of these vasanas, and these vasanas are depicted by the roots of the tree, so obviously you can guess what is moksha. How to cut off the roots of this tree? How do I cut this vasana? Because once I cut the vasana, I am not bound to the world. I am immediately, I am in the direction of the Lord. So, how to do that? How do I chop off these roots? How do I get detached? Knowledge, yes, knowledge is there. No, Vidya, Nitya, Vastu. Vidya, Anitya, Vastu. Viveka. Nitya, Anitya, Vastu, Viveka. So Krishna says, you come and look at the third verse. I will explain to you how to get out of this bondage. Okay? So in the third verse, here, in the first two lines, he will talk about the tree. And then in the next two lines, verse 3, he will talk about how to get out of this bondage, including verses 4 and 5. So second half of verse 3, verses 4, verse 5, he will speak about how to get out of this bondage, and he will give us a series of sadhanas. Okay? So first of all, he is still talking about the tree here. Now, what does he say about this tree? Asya Rupam, Asya means this Rupam, this form, meaning the nature and origin of this universe, Krishna says, Na Upalabhyate, we cannot perceive. You know, many people come to spiritual classes, they keep asking, when will the world come, why did the world come, why are we here, why did God put us, all this, what Krishna is telling, you don't think about all these things, right? Because it's just like asking the question, did the chicken come first or the hen came first? Did the tree come first or the sword come, the seed come first? So it's very difficult for us to comprehend the origins of this world. It says, Asya Rupam, this form, this nature of this world, why did it come, where it came from? Na Upalabhyate, it is not perceived at all. It's very difficult. Iha, Iha means here by the living beings. Iha Na Upalabhyate. So, do not ask, do not keep on questioning about this world, about the origins of the world. And that's why in Hinduism, this world is always presented as a circle. Because in a circle, you never know the beginning nor the end also. It is a complete cycle. Manifestation, unmanifestation to manifestation, manifestation to unmanifestation, and then it goes on and on and on and on. Right? So, what he says now, Tatha, Tatha means in the same way that we also cannot understand. If you look at a tree also, you cannot tell when is the origin, how many times this tree has become a seed and become a tree, and how many times it's gone also, we cannot understand. He says, Tatha, in the same way, the nature of samsara, we also cannot understand. Why? Because he says, if you look at the second line, Na antaha, there is no end to this world. Because the world will never come to a total destruction, total end. It will only go back into unmanifest form. So nobody can predict when is the end of the world, because the world will never end. Na antaha, there is no end to this universe. What about the beginning? Na adihi, nobody even can tell you when is the beginning. And if nobody can tell you when is the beginning, nobody can tell you where is the end, what is the third problem? What is the third problem? Where is the middle? If I don't know where is the beginning and I don't know where is the end, how do I know where is the middle of it? Right, Baba? So, na anta, na adihi, na sampratishta. Sampratishta means the continuance, the center, the middle. So, when was the world created? I don't know. When is the world going to end? I don't know. Are we in the middle, in the beginning? Then I don't know. Because I don't know where is the beginning, I don't know where is the end. So, na adihi, na antaha, na cha sampratishta. Neither, also the center. Right? So, what Krishna is basically saying, don't worry about this creation, the origin, the end and all this. You will never get the answer for this great mystery. What is important for us therefore to know?
How to get out?
They are already here now. How to get out of this? That's what I want to know. No point to ask this, ask that, ask that. Most important now, how to get out of this cycle of world of that. Right? So, now he says, he's still talking about this tree, okay? Why this tree will carry on and on and on? Why there will be no end to this tree? Why there will be no end to this world? Because he says, in the third line, Ashvatam Enam, this tree, this Ashvata tree, will never ever come to an end, because the tree will always give rise to seed, seed will always give rise to another tree. In the same way, because of so many vasanas of so many jivas, we will keep on coming back again and again and again. So suviruda mulam, the roots, mulam, the roots are suviruda, they are very firmly fixed. They firmly bind this tree. That means because of all our desires, because of all our actions, this world can never come to an end. There will always be a karma bhumi, because there will always be jivas who have to come back and perform actions. So never can this world ever come to an end. Suviruda mulam, just like the roots firmly fix the tree to the ground, the vasanas will keep this tree or this world continuously in what we call in manifestation. So now the question is, as I said, it is for us as individuals to understand now, in the world I cannot stop the world, I need to know how to get out of this cycle. So now Krishna is going to tell us in the second half of this verse 3, verse 4 and verse 5, four types of sadhanas or disciplines or remedies, how to break away from this universe, how to cut the roots. Okay? So what are the four which we will discuss when we come back next week, but I'll just briefly tell you. One is Vairagya. Vairagya means dispassion or detachment. That's what we have to practice. And this dispassion or detachment is not because you are disgusted with the world. Because you are a failure in life, then you say, I give up the world. No. It is an intelligent understanding of the world and why I should not get entangled in it. So it is an intelligent withdrawal. It's not because you are a failure. That's why they say all sannyasis are failures in life. Then they don't sit in the ashram, they got nothing to do. They are failures. They are not failures. They understand what is the nature of the world. They don't want to get entangled. So that is Vairagya, intelligent withdrawal. Brahma Vichara. Once we withdraw from the world, we must not leave the mind idle. Once we withdraw the mind from the world, we must give it somewhere else to be fixed to. So Brahma Vichara means inquiry into Brahman or inquiry into the Self. So one is Vairagya, one is Brahma Vichara. The third practice which is going to talk about here is Saranagati or Bhakti, surrender, the total surrender to the Lord. That also is sadhana we have to practice. And finally the fourth is Sadguna. Sadguna means developing a refined mind, cultivating good values, dharmic values. Okay, compassion, non-violence, love, understanding, etc., humility. So those are the values which we have to cultivate, Sadguna. So now he says in this verse number 3, if you look at the last line now, Asanga. Asanga. So Sangha means what? Sangha means attachment. Asanga means what? Detachment. So he says we must learn how to detach. That is the first very important
quality. You must practice this detachment. And what type of detachment? He gives a very practical example. Just like we want to chop off the roots, if we just chop one or two roots, it is not going to destroy the tree, it is not going to detach you from the tree. What you have to do? Dhrinena, use a sharp, a very strong shastrena, a weapon like an axe, which must be very sharp. And chitva, you must uproot, you must cut all the roots. So you don't say, I only detach from this, I detach from that, but everything else I'm attached. Which means what? Chop off everything. Wherever your mind is being attached to the world, learn to be detached from everything. You need a very sharp, sharp weapon means what? You need a sharp mind. You need an intelligent mind. Because this withdrawal has got to be with intelligence. You've got to analyze the world. You've got to understand what is the world. And then, just like you use a sharp axe to cut all the roots, use sharp intelligence to understand and evaluate the world. So there are different types of detachment. There is what is called weak detachment. You know what is weak detachment? Detachment also has got different levels. So one is a very weak detachment. I will try, can, okay, if cannot, never mind, next life I will come back, try again. There is weak detachment. There is no determination to detach. I'll try, I'll give it a try. Okay, you say pass for once a week, I'll try. Then you try, doesn't work, you say never mind, I'll try next month again. So there is weak detachment. So here he's talking about strong detachment. What do you mean by strong detachment? What do you mean by firm detachment? In this life, I want to attain moksha. That is a firm detachment. It is my determination, not in next life, not in 10 lifetimes. In this lifetime, I want to attain moksha. That detachment has got to be firm. So he says, take that resolve. Your detachment must be like a firm axe that cuts all the roots. Your sense of detachment must be strong. When you want to attain moksha, make a firm resolve in this very lifetime. So therefore what he is saying, may you learn to reduce your dependence on the world. Because this world consists of relationships, possessions, including your own body, which is all subject to change, which is continuously changing. And because of that it is unreliable, so do not depend on it. So when we say detachment, it is not out of hatred for the world, but slowly shift your dependence from world dependence to God dependence. So slowly shift your dependence from world dependence to God dependence. And that is what is called as Vairagya. That is the beginning, start of our spiritual journey. Okay? So start first with understanding the world and slowly detaching. So do not depend upon your name, your fame, your possessions for your happiness. Understand these are all fleeting, they are not going to last. So do not get overly attached to them. And that is the first sadhana he explains here. Then when we come back next week, we will take up three more sadhanas in verses 4 and 5. Okay. So there is class next week. We have, I'm sure you're back in that class. Or if not, then if you couldn't come here, better cancel it. Okay. You want to check? You check, then brother tomorrow you can send out the email. Yeah. Otherwise then we cancel for all this and then we only resume in what date was that?
I think better cancel.
And please inform everybody the classes will resume on the 14th of January. Yeah? Yeah. And those who are coming to PD, then we'll see all on the 16th. And the places are all full, right? Right now?
Yeah.
33 places. Okay. I think we end with the prayer.
वसुदेवसुतं देवं कंसचानूरमर्दनं देवकी परमानंदं क Krishnam Vande.